Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. Bioproducts, the new driver of our economy. With the price of petroleum and natural gas on an ever-increasing incline, manufacturers are looking for cheaper sources for their chemical building blocks. And the answer could very well lie with the sugars or carbohydrates that lurk in our trees and wheat straw. Experts in the new field of bioproducts shared their experience and vision at a recent workshop at the Alberta Research Council. Their stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. As the age of petroleum peaks and heads into decline, waiting in the wings to take over is the new field of bioproducts. Residues from traditional farming or pulping processes will soon transform the chemical and energy industries. The Alberta Research Council recently sponsored a workshop on bioproducts, and the moderator was Dr. Yaman Bolek, a senior scientist in forest products at the Alberta Research Council.
The conference is on critical issues in bioproducts development, and we have three objectives. The first one is identify research and development priorities that should practically fit Alberta's bioproduct strategy, which means that how to maximize the biomass residues such as forestry residues and agri-fiber residues and incorporate them into petrochemical industry and chemical products. And the second objective is provide opportunities for networking and cooperation among Alberta's bioproduct stakeholders and scientists. And then we expect achievements in advancements in coming years.
What is the Alberta Research Council doing at this time to put forward the bioproducts, and particularly from wood fiber and forestry products?
Well, there are many initiatives in Alberta Research Council on bioproducts area and nutraceuticals, and I like to talk on our front, which we call them biorefining of lignocellulosic material. Lignocellulosic material is like forest products and agri-fiber, or like straw, wheat straw, and converting them into, first of all, one of them is ethanol, and then other chemicals, which we call them building block or platform chemicals, and then incorporate them into other conventional chemical industry products.
Is there a fair bit of support to move forward in this direction from industry?
Well, we have momentum and support and understanding starting from, I would say, forestry and forestry sector. And we like more interest in the petrochemical industry as well.
You've invited a number of speakers from outside the province to come and speak to the people today. What is it that you're trying to get across with the different perspectives that they bring?
Yes, we have three distinguished keynote speakers. We invited them to talk on three fronts. We select them because when we look at the biorefining, there are three key issues, bioproducts, I would say. One of them is obviously natural materials are very difficult to decompose or unbundle. So one way is bioconversion, like microbial catalysts and so on. Dr. Frost from Michigan State University gave a presentation on biocatalysts and how to convert sugar into conventional chemicals, which are conventionally produced by catalytic methods. And the second speaker talk on biocomposites. Again, our objective, I highlight a few times, to marry the bioproducts or chemicals coming from wood and agri-residues such as cellulose, hemicellulose, and lignin into chemicals and plastic industry. So Dr. Simonson from Oregon State University talk about biocomposites, how to make plastics, which includes fibers, and then convert them to boards and construction materials and so on. And the third speaker, his name is Arthur Rogoskos from Georgia Tech Institute, and he talked on chemical conversion, again, to produce chemicals out of cellulose and hemicellulose and lignin.
What do you see as being the motivation or the drivers behind making these changes? When you think of increased population or the drain on our resources, are those the things that are driving this?
Yes, those are general motivations, but there are also Alberta-specific drives. First of all, in Alberta, we are very fortunate to have natural resources like forestry and agro-residues coming from wheat straw and other straw material, which are unused and already considered as waste, which is very sad to consider them waste. They would bring value and benefit to the rural economy. The second thing is I like to come to the petrochemical industry. In 1980s and 1990s, Alberta's petrochemical industry was growing tremendously because of natural gas feedstock advantage. We were the lowest feedstock for ethylene production. That's the reason big investment came from Dow Chemicals at the time, Union Carbide and NOVA. But the picture has changed from 80s and 90s. Now the feedstock, natural gas feedstock is expensive, relatively expensive compared to naphtha. That's the reason petrochemical companies are now building up their crackers based on naphtha at the Gulf Coast, such as Dow Chemicals mothballing their natural gas-based feedstock ethylene cracker at Seadrift and putting up natural naphtha-based cracker. So what I like to come to the point, if we want to have the same momentum, same growth, we have to be creative and to bring up more value-added products from ethylene. Let me make it more clear. We have naphtha and, natural gas, which is ethane, is separated and converted to ethylene. Ethylene is the building block. And then at the moment, our petrochemical companies produce ethylene glycol, polyethylene, and polystyrene. Those are all commodity chemicals. So if you want to keep the same pace of growth, commodity chemicals wouldn't bring enough advantage with existing price structure of raw material. However, if we bring up some other value-added platform chemicals coming out of from biomass, such as wood or agro-residues, and marry them into the ethylene structure, you can produce chemicals like surfactants or thickeners, which would sell around $4, $5 a kilo instead of 90 cents a kilo.
Thank you very much.
I thank you, Cheryl.
That was Dr. Yaman Bolak, a senior scientist in the Forest Products Business Unit at the Alberta Research Council. The basis of the bioproducts revolution is natural materials that we'll use to develop replacement chemicals for those now derived from petrochemicals. And according to Dr. John Frost, we're actually quite far along in this search. John is a professor of chemistry at Michigan State University.
There's a number of molecules that are being made in near billion kilogram per year quantities that are being made by fermentation processes from glucose that's derived, at least in the States, from cornstarch.
Now, glucose or sugars has come up a number of times in the topics today. Why are they so important?
It's basically a very readily available source of carbon. If you look at petroleum, that was carbon dioxide that was fixed by living organisms tens of millions of years ago. What is being dealt with here is the basic notion that a bioproduct is something that you make from last growing season's CO2. So it's 1 year versus tens of millions of years.
What's the point you're trying to get across to the people today?
From the standpoint of making molecules, chemistry has typically looked at abiotic, non-living processes for making chemicals. But when you're using a sugar to make a chemical, it's very useful to use a microbe as a catalyst. And with genetic engineering techniques, what you can create as a catalyst is ultimately only limited by sequence space. And that's a very small limitation.
What's the area that you're specializing in?
We genetically engineer microbes to create biosynthetic pathways that don't exist in nature. So we will go to different organisms and pull different genes from those organisms, express them all in a single organism, And the enzymes that are encoded by those genes then create a pathway that converts a carbohydrate into a chemical product. So in essence, how can you interface chemical conversions with gene space? You can make a certain amount of products using microbial catalysis. You can make a certain amount of chemicals and molecules using traditional chemical catalysis. But if you combine these two, the connections that you can make between starting materials and products are ultimately only limited by your imagination.
What sorts of products might we see coming out of all of this?
The type of product that's traditionally been made are pharmaceutical agents or precursors of pharmaceutical agents. So a microbe makes an intermediate, and then that intermediate is converted into the drug. That's what you have with your penicillins and your cephalosporins. But now what we're moving into is the ability to make the same types of chemicals that are currently manufactured from petroleum, but instead make those from renewables.
So as we face more and more shortages of petroleum, whether it's political or from a resource base perspective, is that what's driving this change?
Part of it. The other aspect is environmental. That one of the powers of using genetically engineered microbes within and contained within a steel fermenter is that you can achieve chemical transformations under conditions that are much more mild than what you typically use in chemical catalysis. So it doesn't require as much energy. Very frequently you're not generating as many waste byproducts, so the waste streams are more amenable and handleable. So yes, the feedstock consideration in terms of the price of carbon as it relates to what a barrel of petroleum goes for is very important, but the environmental issues are also comparably important.
What do you see as some of the issues facing researchers now as we try to move into this more bioproducts-based economy?
Scientists are some of the most conservative people around intellectually, irrespective of their politics. And it is, I think, very difficult for people to look over the hill that's in front of them to the valley beyond. Each discipline has its own language. Each discipline has its own politics. And what is necessary to make this happen requires very much of kind of the Elizabethan man model as opposed to a narrow core training.
Well, one of the suggestions that came up today is that as you try and come up with new ideas, rather than following the traditional approach, there seems to be a new approach to just throw everybody from every discipline into a room, shut the door, and tell them to come up with new ideas. Do you see that as something that's going to have to happen in order to move beyond the hill into the valley?
Well, that's one mechanism, but you can also do that on an individual basis. Let's take Louis Pasteur. Louis Pasteur established the basis of chirality. That's a fundamental in organic chemistry. Louis Pasteur debunked spontaneous generation. But the other thing people don't realize, Louis Pasteur established the acetic acid vinegar industry in Europe that is still used in France today. So here is one individual from over a century ago, that was distinguished in microbiology, organic chemistry, and it was one individual. So I think that there's also the paradigm that individuals can take off their limiting glasses and see further. So I think it's a dimension. It's the human condition. You have socialization that's important, and it's also the individual component.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. John Frost, a professor of chemistry at Michigan State University. He was speaking at the recent workshop on bioproducts at the Alberta Research Council. When you go to the lumber store for materials, you actually have a lot to choose from. Aside from the usual spruce and fir dimensional lumber, you've also got products like MDF, oriented strand board, and of course plywood. And something that's making a big impact in the decking market is a composite of wood and plastic. Well, someday soon, you may be buying composite products made from barnacles or even nanocrystals. Dr. John Simonson specializes in wood science and engineering at Oregon State University.
Nanocrystals are made from cellulose, which can come from wood or a variety of other natural products, including bacteria. And they're part of the cellulose itself. It's made by Mother Nature. And when nature makes cellulose, it makes it both with crystals and non-crystalline portions. So what we do is take the natural cellulose and remove the non-crystalline portions, and what's left is the crystalline cellulose, which it turns out is nano-sized, so we call it cellulose nanocrystals.
What would be the advantages of that as opposed to what we're doing now?
The cellulose nanocrystals are very strong and stiff, and we feel that this could give better properties to composites. They can't be used by themselves. Chemically, it just doesn't work out that way, that they can be used by themselves. They need to be chemically modified or combined with other substances in order to make them a useful product. If you try and make products out of them by themselves, it's too brittle to use. So we have to do some chemical tricks to make them into useful products.
What's happening in the research field now, then, to deal with some of those issues around composites and bioproducts?
Well, as we receive funding, we're attempting to solve some of these issues, and our approach is to combine them with polymers. And there's a couple of ways to do that. You could mix them with polymers directly, or you can grow the polymers from the surface of the nanocrystal itself. And we're looking at both ways.
We've talked about nanocrystals. What other sources are there for materials that you can use for composites? One of the ones you brought up in your talk was barnacles.
Well, the barnacles actually have cellulose in them, and you can make the nanocrystalline cellulose out of the barnacles. They call it, the barnacles, the technical name is tunicates, and so they call it tunicin, but it's actually cellulose. And it's has some special properties that aren't found in other species. One of the interesting things about the cellulose nanocrystals, at least it's interesting to me, is that depending on what species you get them from, they have different shapes and sizes, so that you can use the different species that produce cellulose to give you different properties in the final composite.
So really what you're talking about is cellulose, wherever it comes from, as being the base for all of this.
Cellulose in nature it varies some, but not a lot, between species. It has the basic same crystal structure in nature and basically changes length and width, but the chemistry of it and the basic crystal structure is the same.
What do you see as being the drivers for this sort of change?
With the nanotechnology, the driver is the promise that we can get properties that are currently not available. The nanotechnology offers the potential to do things that today can't be done. In other areas of wood composites, there are problems that need to be solved that would make the current composites more useful or to replace existing composites with something that's better. The nanocomposites offer the possibility of doing something entirely different.
What are some of those problems with the composites that we have available today?
Well, one is that wood requires maintenance. It requires that you stain it and keep it up. Plastic products, the wood plastic composites, don't have that problem. They're advertised at least as maintenance free. And generally you just have to power wash them every once in a while. You don't have to stain them. They don't check. They don't split. So I think that one of the directions I would like to see wood composites go is to provide this dimensional stability for natural wood, or something that has natural wood on its surface, so that it behaves like natural wood but also behaves like the plastics, where it doesn't warp, check, split, and things like that.
How close are we to seeing some of these new things come on the market?
Well, there's new developments coming all the time. The things I've just been talking about are a ways off, I'm afraid.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. John Simonson, an associate professor in wood science and engineering at Oregon State University. Another scientist working in the field of bioproducts is Dr. Arthur Rogauskas. He's a professor of process chemistry at the Institute of Paper Science and Technology in Atlanta, Georgia. Arthur sees a time in the very near future when pulp mills will replace oil refineries. After all, there's sugar in them, there are trees, and that's what will fuel what he calls the carbohydrate economy.
A lot of people now believe that our dependency on petroleum is limited, whether it's 15 years, whether it's 50 years. At some point, we all acknowledge that ultimately there's a finite amount of that material available. And if we move forward from that, the question is, what do you use as a resources to supplement or to go beyond petroleum? And if you're going to go beyond petroleum, one of the most natural ways is to use the carbohydrates that are available basically in trees and crops and a variety of other biomass.
How would you refine them?
That's a big challenge. I mean, the exciting part is some of that's already done because you have some bioethanol plants you're using for fuel that are basically being generated right now from plant crops. But if you want to continue to go down that road, you're going to need higher volumes of materials. One of those volumes of materials are trees. The fortunate part about that is if you're looking at using trees as a fuel resource, many people argue that one of the most exciting and promising ways to do this is to integrate this in the forest products industry, which already collects trees, chips trees, processes trees, and what their primary interest is to make paper. All the other waste streams right now are basically converted into fuel, into heat, and actually converted in a very expensive way and an inefficient way. So if you could do a couple of things. One, some of the material that ends up going to waste that's used, that is burned, if it was pre-extracted, these are these hemicelluloses that you find in trees, which are just a polymer of sugars that don't contribute overall to the pulp and paper stream, could be utilized as a stream for processing into secondary chemicals or secondary fuels, such as either bioethanol or biodiesel itself. And because the tree is already transported and chipped, the cost associated with that kind of process is not as high as if you were going to, let's say, collect a pile of ag fibers where you'd have to collect them on purpose. Secondly, you have a waste stream that right now is burned in what's called a recovery furnace. In the future, many people believe that it'll actually go into a gasifier, and because a gasifier works at higher temperatures, you get greater energy efficiencies, and what it allows for is a pulp and paper mill is that they can then become a net exporter of power instead of an importer of power. And then once you have a gasifier, you'll have a syngas line, which you can then clean up and by Fischer-Tropsch convert into a variety of other chemicals and fuels.
Do you have to do anything special that's particularly out of the ordinary in order to convert an ordinary pulp mill into a biorefinery, as it were?
That, I think, is the exciting part. I mean, the core part of it is there. If you think of down the road in the future, you want to have a biorefinery. What do you have to do is you have to collect material, you have to process material, you need the capital infrastructure to do that, and you have to have the people. Well, the collecting part, the forest products industry does already. The people they have already, they have the environmental permits, and they already have the best practices in forests, so they can actually handle that resource in the future for a long time because it's self-sustainable. So what happens is you're really asking a forest products industry or a pulp mill to have a broader spectrum of products, and products that actually down the road we all acknowledge we're going to need, and that need is already developing with the cost of fuels increasing.
Is this science fiction, or could it happen today or tomorrow?
I don't think it's science fiction. The pieces of fundamental knowledge are there already. That's the really exciting part. You can look in the literature, and you can find pieces of it. What really needs to be done now is to have an integrated solution so that you can go towards people that are running these plants who cannot afford a mistake, because the mistakes come on billions of dollars, and say, look, we've done this, we've done the lab work, we've done the demonstration work, and we can show that we can, for example, extract hemicellulose prior to Kraft pulping, and in return what we do is we get a new chemical that will generate new revenue streams, and when we do that, we can also give you a wood that actually is equal, if not better, for pulping and paper manufacturing. If you do this properly, what you'll do is you'll take out hemicelluloses that are actually now wasted in the Kraft pulping process, get a new chemical, and because you take them out, you should improve your pulping operations. And for those mills that are limited due to their capacity for combustion of the waste products, now you don't have as much waste products to combust. As a result, you have more throughput. Therefore, you're going to be able to generate more profit from your core line, which is your pulp and paper manufacturing operations.
If we look down the road, though, we're looking at increasing population and decreasing resources. Is there going to be enough wood, enough sustainable wood from our forests to actually make this happen?
That's a tough question to answer, because what you have to ask is, what will society allow and what will be the best practices? I think we have, especially in North America, have gone way beyond the days of, let's say, take everything off the land and leave nothing behind. A variety of industries, especially the forest products industry, realizes that it has to manage its resources for the future. If you think about it, the forest products industry and maybe the ag industry, the only two industries that are truly sustainable, and they realize their success in the long term is on their ability to manage their resources. So if you look at the last 50 years or so, they've been successful in managing their resources and making sure that down the road they will have what they need. So I think it's not an issue if we're going to lose this. I think we'll have to come into balance.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
That was Dr. Arthur Rogauskas, a professor of process chemistry at the Institute of Paper Science and Technology in Atlanta, Georgia. He was in Edmonton recently to speak at the workshop on bioproducts at the Alberta Research Council. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during the program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the Alberta Conservation Association, Ducks Unlimited Canada, the University of Lethbridge, Science Alberta Foundation, Alberta Ingenuity, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, and Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited. Innovation Alberta is mixed to Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.